Are you ready for a job that gets you more? UPS is hiring now. As a warehouse worker, you'll earn up to $21 per hour, and you might even be eligible for a program that helps you with thousands of dollars for college, in many cases tuition-free. Search and apply now at upsjobsky.com.
Card Nation, this is attorney Alex White with SueDistractedDriver.com. Our law firm is a team of dedicated attorneys ready to fight for you. If you get injured because of someone else's negligence, their insurance company already has a legal team, and now so do you. If you or a friend or loved one are injured, find your attorney at SueDistractedDriver.com.
This is an advertisement.
Time now for the V Show with Bob Valvano on your sports station, ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
All right, it's Monday. Thanks for being with us. In just a few minutes, we're going to go out to Coach Satterfield for his weekly presser, and let's head out there right now.
There's me passing. It's crazy, man. He was,
and it really showed right from the start, and you know, in the second half, and got a nice win on a great day for obviously Lamar and our program. It was a great celebration with that. That was really neat to be a part of, to witness that. And particularly, you know, at halftime, we had such a good lead, and you come out in the second half, and he's still on the field. We're trying to warm up. We got the band out there, but that was pretty cool to be able to see Lamar for that. And then he came in the locker room and talked to our guys. That was neat. And so, it was just an honor for me. I didn't coach him, but, you know, heard so much about him. To be around him, you know, for that day and that special occasion, which was pretty neat. We'll remember that forever. So, but for us, more importantly, to get that win, that was huge. And then now, you know, it's a short week, which is always challenging. You know, as you look back to our first part of the season, we had to play, you know, 3 games in 12 days, and our guys handled that well. So we've been able to do this before and handle it well. So we had a good practice last night. It was a little bit longer than what a normal Sunday would be. And then today we're going to practice tonight a little bit later to give our coaches time to prep. And this will be like a Tuesday, Wednesday combined into one, which is always difficult. And then tomorrow for us is our walkthrough. So this week's going to fly by. Then we'll be on the plane on Wednesday. So, you know, anytime you're playing a short week like this, you know, I think you got to scale back a little bit. You know, you can't do a ton of things because you just don't have time to work it. You know, and then get our guys to play fast. That's our whole key for this week, is to get practice fast. I just met with our leadership group, and to go out here tonight and to practice really good and fast and be focused and intent on what we have. We know what we have in front of us, an opportunity to win 6 right here in this game to get bowl eligibility, and we want that. Our players want that, and you know, we got to practice that way in order for that to happen. So you know, a little bit about Duke. I think, you know, number one, you know, everybody wants, you know, they'll look at their record and their last few games, and they haven't played as well. But I think one thing that stands out to me when I look at it is that when they play at home, they play like a different team compared to when they're on the road. They've played 4 out of the last 6 on the road, which has been difficult. You know, they started the season off 3-1, and all those 3 wins were at home. And then the two losses at home this year, they had Georgia Tech. It was 31-27. Georgia Tech had to go, I think, 90 yards with no timeouts to win it, and they did it. And then, you know, they played a Pitt team, which is arguably one of the best teams in the ACC, and, you know, they scored 29 on Pitt, which I think is a really good defense. So they have played a lot better at home. And, you know, the last week, their starting quarterback didn't play. They had to play a freshman quarterback, and they ended up making a switch at halftime and played another freshman who actually the second one, I think, rushed for over 100 yards, and they did some good things. So, you know, not really sure who their quarterback will be this week. They have one of the best running backs in the country, Durant, who is an outstanding running back. You know, his rushed over 1,000 yards, pretty similar, really, probably, you know, to the guy we had last week we had to face, who was another outstanding running back as well. So, you know, we know what's at stake. I think offensively they've put up some good numbers on their offense, and, you know, so obviously defense needs to have a great week this week and being able to prepare for them. So, again, we're looking forward to it, headed down to Durham, where I was born and grew up, and I've never played or coached in Wallace Wade Stadium, and I grew up 5 minutes from it. And so this is going to be pretty cool for me to be able to go back to my hometown and where I grew up to be able to coach and play in this stadium. It's actually where I went to my first football camp when I was 7 years old. Steve Spurrier was the offensive coordinator back then. It was a long time ago. So a lot of history there, but I'm excited about going back and playing in this stadium.
Scott, you look at the – I mean –
big opportunity to be bowl eligible with the win against Duke. Do you talk to the guys about it, and then just the opportunity to be bowl eligible two out of your first 3 years here, and knowing last year was last year, but what would that mean for the program?
Yeah, we just certainly talked to our guys about it. I think that's a goal of ours, and we set out at the beginning of the season, and you know we're certainly we're right there on the cusp of it. So I think it's the elephant in the room. We want to talk about it. We know what we're playing for this week. We know what we're preparing for. It's great motivation for us, and you know it's exciting. I think, and you know you talk about you know being just maybe the second two out of 3 years, our first three. I think it's great. You know, it's what we want to do. We'll be playing for bowls every year, contending for those championships. You know, we talk about how you want to finish the season. I think everybody remembers that, and it also propels you into the next season. It propels you into recruiting, all the things that can happen. And, you know, so, yeah, it's an exciting time for us. And, man, we're excited to be able to get out on the field. And albeit a short week, we're playing Thursday night on national TV. I think that's awesome, too, for our program. I know recruits across the country are going to be watching that and also our fans. So, yeah, we're excited about it.
Scott, obviously Duke's kind of struggled a little bit this season, and it's on a short week. Do you think the prospect of being bowl eligible in this game and coming off will kind of help with the energy levels in this game and maybe kind of snuff out any sort of complacency that might arise?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. You know, that it is all about our preparation. So there's great motivation, you know, for this game to so we can have that extra 3 weeks of practice to get ready to go play another bowl game. And you know, I think for us, man, we've been on the cusp of a lot of these games, and our guys continue to fight and strive to get over top and win these games. We finally put one together with complete team win, and that's encouraging. Hopefully our guys are fired up to know that, hey, this way we can play. No matter who we're playing, let's go out and let's put this thing together. And, you know, against a team that, you know, shoot, it doesn't matter who you play. Anybody can beat you, you know, so you better be ready to rock and roll.
Coach, Hassan Hall hit the transfer portal. Why did he decide to do it now? What was that conversation like as he told you he was going to leave the program?
I don't know why anybody decides to leave in the middle of the season, particularly when you're playing. He just, you know, it's like anybody else that decides to do that. That's what they felt that was right for them. So, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, but I think, you know, and I've said this forever. It really just came into play the last few years with the opt-outs and stuff like that. I just think you finish out the season. That's my opinion. But, you know, each individual person has their own opinions. And, you know, if that's what they feel they have to do, then that's what they're going to do. And we're not going to stand in their way.
Scott, how much do you think Saturday gave your program a boost with your guys in the building? Can you tell a difference? Do they have a certain kind of energy to their steps?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was huge. I mean, we come off really two difficult losses there, right there at the end, and we needed a win. We needed a win like that, too. I think that was huge, not just to go out there and, you know, have another close game and win it at the end. We needed to go out and dominate a game like we're capable of doing. We put it all together. I think we've done it a few times throughout the season. You know, I think about the first half of Florida State. We played really well as a team, you know, and there's been some other spurts in the game. But I think this was the first time this year that we did it, you know, all three phases. It was a complete team win, and the game was not, you know, not close there in the second half. And I think that was huge for our guys. So to have that happen, and hopefully that'll give us confidence to know we can do that, you know, because I think Syracuse was a good team. They're 5-4, and again, we talked about it. They lost three games by 3 points. So, I mean, to be able to go out and do it like that, I mean, that was huge for our guys.
Scott, kind of off the Hassan Hall stuff, you have Juwar Jordan, Maurice Berkeley behind him. I mean, you could play Juwar and still save his red shirt. Just, you see the program giving him some more carries now that he's healthy?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think Saturday was the first time we've really seen him do anything. He was hurt, you know, in camp. We really didn't get the chance to see him scrimmage or play, you know, in the first 2 months of the season. And so that was pretty neat for him to be able to go out and play against a team that he, you know, obviously knew a bunch of those guys. But I thought he ran hard. He did a lot of good things. He made a couple guys miss when we, you know, we didn't block it up very, very well. And he still hit some big runs. He's got some juice in the legs, I think. He can run. He's got some speed. And so, you know, hopefully he'll continue to get work into the mix. You know, he's still got Berkeley there as well. You know, so, you know, those are – you know, certainly four capable backs we think can get in there and play and help us out. And, you know, it was good for Mitchell to get over 100 yards again Saturday. That was nice. You know, Cooley's still playing and still learning the game, learning what we're trying to do. So we're just glad we got several backs there that we can be able to put in there if we need be. But we'll see. We'll see how it works out by the, you know, Thursday.
Scott, obviously Duke has one of the more underrated backs in the league in Mateo Durant. Mm-hmm. Given how the defense has played over the last several weeks against the run, like against Sean Tucker, NC State's duo, how confident does that make you that the defense will be able to hold up its end of the bargain and continue on their trajectory they're going?
You know, I think, you know, it gives us great confidence to know we got to stop the run. We know that. So our prep today defensively will be, you know, we got to stop the run. We know that's a strength of what they're trying to do. You know, so, but I think it does give you confidence to know what we've been able to do the last, you know, three or four games against some good running attacks to be able to, you know, really keep those guys in check. That'll be imperative this Thursday night, you know, because if they're able to run the football, then it opens up everything. And, you know, we have to fit well. Our guys have to be where they're supposed to be. We have to tackle well. And I think we've done that the last few weeks. It's been really good. You know, where we've gotten hurt defensively is, you know, in the throw game, giving up some big plays in the throw game and that type of thing. I thought we did outstanding Saturday with that as well, holding them to, 40-some yards passing. So, but I think if you do shut the run game down, then you know, obviously your defense plays a lot better in the throw game as well, just because they can't play action as much. You know, if they do throw it, it's easy to see what's happening. So yeah, we got to play good in the run game and shut that down.
Your guys have really cleaned up a lot of those tackles for loss allowed. Strangely, though, the third down percentage is, like, way down. Like, how do you kind of explain that? It seems like it shouldn't correlate.
No, I know. We've done a lot better, you know, getting in manageable down and distances. We've actually done really good in third and long this year. That's probably one of our better ones. We've not been good in the third and short and third and medium, which is unbelievable to me. You know, and it's hard to explain. We can obviously go back and we look at the film and we see – you know, I feel like it's just one block here or one throw here or, one one route here. And it just so happens to be on some of those third downs. And, you know, I thought Saturday we did better on third down, you know, particularly probably the first three quarters, you know, and then in the later in the game we didn't do as well. But we converted on some of those, and we hit some touchdowns on some of those third downs, which was good with the one to Watkins. I know it was a third and two call. Great throw and catch. You know, so I think you know, it's just one of those things. We just haven't been good at that. You know, I don't know. You know, you can't put a just one. There's not one reason why. I think it's been several things to happen. You know, I remember one of the third and shorts on Saturday. We ran inside zone, and you know, we get beat across the face. They hit us in the backfield. I mean, it's just, you know, so it's just one block here, one throw here, to be able to get those. And you know, we got to do better at it, you know, but I do like the fact that I think we're maybe number one in the conference in sacks given up. We're just, man, we flipped the script on that from our first year, which that's been tremendous. And I do. I think our offensive line has played very well this year in that regard, tackles for loss, not giving up the sacks, you know, giving Malik time to throw the football has been better. And, you know, I think those guys have really gelled and meshed, and we're playing about seven of those guys, and it's been good to see.
Scott, Amari Huggins-Bruce, two touchdowns. I mean, he's come a long way from the UCF, or I think it was the EKU game where he dropped the first, his surefire touchdown. Just his kind of talk about his growth and kind of where you see his trajectory. He seems like a guy who can make plays at the ball.
Yeah, I mean, he's still learning. You know, we're still learning. He's learning the offense and where we're trying to put him in that. You know, he's playing that slot receiver, which we do a lot of things with that receiver, with the motions, you know, fly motions, jet motions, and all those type things. We're able to get him loose on some of those Saturday, which was good. I think when you see what he can do when the ball's in his hand, he's very explosive, and he's fast now. You know, he's not one of these guys that has to get going a little bit. He also runs scared, which I like, because – you know, he's not really big, so he don't want to get hit by those guys. So he turns on the afterburners, and I tell you, he broke his tackle Saturday, which was good because he's not that big. And then he lowered his head, and you know, there at the goal line and try to get that touchdown, he got it. So I think he's got a lot of potential. You know, it's really going to be up to him, you know, how much you want to continue to work. And I talked about it Saturday, how Tyler Harrell's worked himself into where he's at right now, because he was an extremely hard worker and he's still working at his craft to get better as a route runner. But it's paying off for him. And I think, you know, Huggins could be the same way if he'll continue to work. He's got tons of potential in that slot. And I think that's where we lacked, I thought, in the Clemson game was the slot receiver. We didn't get much of that production out of that, which I'm glad we did this past week. We got to continue to be able to expand on that position.
Is he stronger than people give him credit for?
I think probably, you know, but I do think there's a lot of quick twitch in there in the muscles where he's very explosive. So, you know, when you're like that and here comes a defender with, you know, you're going to explode up into him. You know, you're able to break some of those tackles, you know, and he's got pretty good vision as well. And he's got good hands. I mean, he can catch the football. So for him, it's just a matter of continuing to learn the offense. And I think the more he learns, the more things we can do with him, and then the better he'll be.
You mentioned that you camped at Duke when mm-hmm. Spurrier was there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you grew up 5 minutes from mm-hmm. there. I mean, could you just expand on, you know your time in that area in Duke? And
well, where I grew up right there, again, it was right beside Duke University. And I ended up – my rec league team that I played with was Hillendale. That was where I went to elementary school, which was, again, 5 minutes from Duke. We played in the in a county stadium there growing up when I was 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. And we had to go to – we had a concession stand at Duke where my mom worked and sold out of the concession stand. But that's how we raised money for our rec league team. And us players had to sell 10 programs to get into games free. And so I went – I grew up going to every Duke football game from the time I was 7 to 12. Was always out there, you know, hustling those programs. And, you know, so we could get into game free. And usually when we got into games, we'd go – we just go play football and over try to find some grass field or something. We didn't even watch the games, but as kids, you know, we're just trying to play. But I just remember going to a bunch of those games and just experiencing, you know, that Duke football back in the day. And I never really like pulled for them or anything, but we were just right there. That was just kind of one of the things we did. We went to Duke football games every Saturday and after we finished playing. And it's kind of funny because – and then I tore my ACL in high school, and I had to do all my rehab in the press box right there at Wallace Wade. It's where they had an orthopedic clinic. So I was there – my junior year of high school, I was there every day doing that. So I spent a ton of time there, but just – and I camped there a bunch, but I've never played there. I never coached there. You know, and there's been a lot of changes over the years. They used to have a track around their field. You know, they took the track out. They built the indoor back behind the stadium there. They got the practice fields. I mean, it's a great setup now compared to what it used to be. And, you know, it's just, for me, it's just really cool as a kid growing up, you know, loving football. And I was always in that stadium and I've never been there. It's going to be awesome to be able to go back and play stadium.
Scott, with a short week coming up, where's the team at health-wise, outside of the obvious guys are out for the season?
Yeah, we're actually, man, in great shape. You know, that was one of the things I was talking to Matt earlier, you know, particularly having a short week and not having anybody dinged up. We played a bunch of guys on Saturday, and so we were able to get some of the starters out, and we're in really good shape. Everybody's good to go. We don't have anybody that's not. You know, Cunningham's healthy. Shoot, I'm trying to think of anybody. I think everybody came out of that game, you know, very healthy, and trying to get back Wilson. Is it Wilson? Cam, yeah, Cam. He's been out for a few weeks. Trying to get him to practice. He may be close to being ready this week. It's going to be close. It's a short week. I think it was Saturday. He'd definitely be ready. You know, but he'll be one that that we're trying to. He's practiced a little bit yesterday, so we'll see where he's at. But everybody else is good to go.
Yasir Abdullah has 9 sacks on the mm-hmm. season. What can you say about his production and getting to the quarterback this season?
Yeah, he's had a great year. He's, you know, I think he's second in ACC in sacks. One of the top tackle for loss guys. He's had just an outstanding year coming off the edge. He's got a motor. He's gotten bigger and stronger over the offseason. And, you know, I think what we're trying to do scheme-wise is free him up and put him one-on-one with some guys, and he's able to beat those guys. Again, I think he's going to continue to get better and better. He's a hard worker, you know, and proud of our defense. We went close to 30 sacks on the season right now with a couple games left, and, you know, which is a, you know, I don't know where it's at. Rocco would know, but I mean, we're, you know, we hadn't had that many in a while in 2016. So, yeah, that's pretty good, and hopefully we'll continue to elevate this number. And but he's been a big part of that, along with, you know, the defensive line. They've been getting after the passer, which has been really good. Good to see. And, But hopefully Yasir continue and be one of the top sack guys as we head to, throughout the end of the season. All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Excuse me. Scott Satterfield after Louisville's just sailing victory on Saturday, which was something that was much needed for everybody around here, the fans, the team, the coaching staff. So I don't think there's any question about that. By the way, I'm going to send a tweet out about this. I've officially decided that the term opt-out is one of the vilest new euphemisms we've come up with. And listen, I'm a guy who's always argued that players should be able, and I'm not doing this just for Hassan's, you know, situation. I'm just saying in general. Because I agree with him. It doesn't make any sense. If the term opt-out didn't exist, I mean, this is what you're quitting. And that's, like I said, if it's in your best interest to quote-unquote quit what you're doing, fine. People quit their jobs, but stop making it sound that there's already enough of a pseudo-professionalism to what they're doing, meaning, you know, I get it. They should be allowed to make money. They all those things are true, but they're not professional players yet, and therefore the move of them should not be discussed the same way. They don't get traded. They're not. Their contracts aren't owned per se. They don't. That's not the same thing. So opting out implies kind of like I'm sure in a lot of players' minds, it's their way of saying, well, I'm kind of declaring free agency. No, you're not. You're quitting the team that you're on. Now you're quitting, and you're going to try and find another place to play. That's what you're doing. And the portal is helping people do it, and that's fine. But the opt out is just such a fake made up term for quitting, because I look at it and I say, you know, if you love playing, and that's the part I don't get, you know, now you can play right away when you leave. So he, I don't think he's going to go anywhere, him or anybody else is going to go play this year. So you're going to go play next year. Well, you could finish the season and go play next year. There's no difference. All you're doing is taking away the opportunity to play, what, three or four more games, I guess, right? That's what they had left when he quit. He quit. He opted out. He quit. That's what he did. And yeah, I know it sounds personal because that's just what triggered this, but I look at it all the time now. It doesn't make any sense. Finish the year and then go. If you really wanted to act like a professional, you'd finish your contract, quote unquote. So that doesn't make any sense. It's actually less professional. Not only that, here's the thing that I just, you know, they say youth is wasted on the young. I don't think that they understand that sports is about moments. And you never know where the moments are going to come. Like, for example, Kansas is having one of the worst football seasons you could have at a big-time level. They were winless in the Big 12. They were dead last. They had one win on the season. They were 1-8, I think. I think it's 1-8. And they go to play Texas at Texas, you know, you'd have assumed they were going to get beat by 50. And instead, they win with a walk-on, catching a two-point conversion in overtime to win the game. That is something. That's a moment that collectively that team will never forget. I don't care if they were 2-8 or 2-28. That's a moment that they won't ever forget. And if you had quote-unquote opted out on that team, you don't get to share in that. And so why would you take that away from yourself? You could still go. If you want to leave at the end of the year and go play somewhere else, you can still do that. There's no, I mean, you can, but why would you take away the you never know. A moment may come in, you know, those last four games. That happens. You know, a guy who comes out of nowhere and runs two kicks back for touchdowns or something. I mean, there's all sorts of things like that that happen all the time. I mean, I know it's a small college, but when I was playing, when I was still in college, I was working as a student assistant for our basketball team. Not a manager. I was one of the student assistant coaches. I was the head JV coach, and I was the varsity assistant. This is my senior year. And we had a kid who played on my JV team all year. And we played in the conference championship game. And, you know, back then, you know, you could, if it didn't exceed the total number of games that you were allowed to play, which I think at that time was 27, the kid could play on the JV and the varsity. He could play both. So, in other words, you know, he played, I think we had a 19-game JV schedule. So, when the conference tournament came, high schools used to do this all the time. They'd bring a kid up from the JV to dress with the varsity. So, he could dress for the the varsity. He was allowed to. The most you're going to play in the conference tournament was three games, so he was not going to go over the limit, so he was fine. So we bring him up, we call him up to the varsity, and he plays with us, and in the championship game. Now, he hasn't played on the varsity the whole year. He's played just on my JV team. And it's one of those games where everybody fouls out. It's an overtime game, and we have like four guys foul out, they have like three guys foul out, and we're like out of players, and he has to go in and play. And he plays, and in the overtime, as soon as we put him in, we miss a free throw, and he rebounds it, puts it back up, and scores. Next possession, he gets another offensive rebound and scores. At the defensive end, he steals the ball, and we wind up winning the conference championship. And I promise you, I have never forgotten it. I didn't even do it. So him and the teammates will never forget that. Why would you take that away from yourself by, quote-unquote, opting out? You're quitting. That's what you're doing. And it's just, you know, like I said, please don't make this just about him, because I'm not trying to personalize it. But it struck me, you know, and you could tell by Satterfield's answer, he was kind of annoyed. Like, but, you know, you are playing. Why would you? If you're playing, you got a chance. Go, you know, you make a create your own moment. I guarantee, you know, I can't say for certain you'll have a great moment if you keep playing. But I can guarantee if you stop playing, you won't have a great moment. I mean, that's for certain. So the opt out, now that that's come into play, now nobody quits anymore. Everybody opts out. It's just it's not good. It's just not good. We're at the bottom of the hour. We got a lot to talk about, including, I know, you know, my job, which I take seriously, which annoys some people, I think, is that, you know, when you get beat and you don't play well, and make no mistake, Louisville's basketball team did not play remotely well on Friday. I'm not suggesting that if you're a passionate fan, you don't bark. I get it. You just need to bark. My job is to just try and make sure you're barking up the right trees. And I hear a lot of stuff that I don't think is barking up the right tree. So it makes me get somewhat, you know, people want to, then you got to vent at somebody, so then you can start venting at me and they start yelling at me. But I'm just telling you what I believe to be true. I'm not defending anybody, you know, irrationally or something. I'm just telling you what I think is the truth, and that's what we'll talk about when we come back about that as well. I will say this. The football game Saturday, go back to football before we get to a break, against Duke, or Thursday, actually, excuse me. The football game against Duke becomes now the long run-up to the football for Charlie Brown. And if they somehow lose to Duke, Lucy's going to pull the ball away, and the collective fan base is going to go whomping on its ass as absolutely with a thud, the same way that Charlie Brown does. This is an absolute must game for them. I'm sorry. I don't care you can say if they lose this and they beat Kentucky, everybody would be happy because they beat the rival, but it'll still be a year where you feel like it's going all over the map. If they could get bowl eligible with still a game to go and get to 6-5, I'm telling you, that's very significant given the ups, the heartbreaking losses they had. This game is tremendously important. They, you know, like I said, I'm sure everybody, they could be 0-10 and beating Kentucky would be a big deal, and I get that, and it always will be. But I'm telling you, this would make a hell of a difference in perception, I think, and I think rightfully so. It would be two bowl games in his 3 years here, and he's never lost the locker room, in my opinion. You watch how hard they're playing, and then it would put, you know, back to back wins together to get to six wins. I think there's some significance there. I really do. So they got a great opportunity. This is a very, very good opportunity game, but it's more than that because it's a game they got to win. I mean, this is not a good Duke team. They've really struggled mightily, really struggled.
Well, they're not just not good. They're
bad.
They're terrible. I mean, they're one of the five worst, you know, FBS defenses in the country. I forgot exactly what their ranking is. I think they're like 131 out of. You know, I mean, how many college football teams are there? Like 135.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they're terrible. I mean, it got to the point. Drew and Perrin this morning were in process. I don't want to give him any accolades because he said that I looked like I was my hairline was receding earlier today. So I'm trying to think of how I should punish process. But regardless, the three of them made some pretty good points this morning, and they said one of them was basically that the season's going to be defined by the UK game.
Oh, I disagree.
Really?
That's absolutely.
Totally because disagree. Duke is so bad. I mean, obviously, if you lose to Duke, then it's very easy. But
I very much disagree with that. Because,
really?
Because if you define it by that, the fact of the matter is, and oh, this will make Louisville fans want to come, you better lock the door because they're going to come down thinking I'm doing the show from there. Kentucky's got a better team than Louisville this year. Sorry, they do. I mean, what can I tell you? They by most metrics, they do. Louisville's 41st in the country, and I think Kentucky is, where the hell are they? They are
36?
32. They're 10 spots ahead of them. They're 10 spots ahead of them in the Sagarins, and their record is they were bowl eligible like by Halloween, or they've had a better year. They've had a better season in a tougher league. This year it is. Sorry, it just is. Again, you look at the metrics of the league, the SEC that they are in is the West is the strongest conference in the country. The East is not, but if you average it out, it comes out to 83 plus 74. That's about 78 for an average, and the ACC comes in at about 74. So I mean, not a lot, but I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not taking shots at Louisville. So again, that's I'm going to get that. If you don't go on the air and just say hail to the Cardinal and everything's great and everything's wonderful, and then when I do that, then you're a homer and even the fans don't want to hear it. So, I mean, you can't win. So I just try and be honest, which is that this was a team that he's right. When he's talked about one play here, one play there, he's absolutely right, Coach Satterfield is, that a couple of plays here and there and their overall record would be significantly better. But the fact of the matter is that's a yardstick that you're not quite a good team yet, a very good team yet. They're not a bad team at all. I mean, 41st in the country is no sin. It's not an embarrassment. I mean, they played the 20th hardest schedule in the country. Again, nothing embarrassing. There's nothing embarrassing at all about the program. But what happens is when you have a team that one play late in games can decide it, the margin of error is too small. And then you're relying on, I know, hey, oh, here we go, this jackass with luck again. But it's true. The metrics people will tell you it winds up being luck. And they've been unlucky. They've been very, very unlucky. That's the reality of it. But the fact of the matter is that you got to get a little better, so luck can't jump up and bite you with one bad play here and one bad play there, and that's kind of what they've had. But but they're not a terrible team, and he hasn't lost the locker room, and he knows what he's doing. And it irritates the crap out of me that people were just losing their minds. And now, like, all of a sudden, if he loses to Kentucky, one of the top 30 teams in the country, if he loses that game, like, now he's a failure? I mean, seriously.
Well, I think what Drew and Perrin and Process were saying this morning was just the fact that with the remaining games, with the hand currently dealt, I mean, obviously had they...
Well, there's
had
only two games left. Duke is not going to define them.
Right. But so what I'm suggesting is the season success or failure is going to be defined by the UK game based on where we are right now. Not as a bigger picture. I mean, obviously, had they beaten Wake, had they beaten Clemson, had they beaten Virginia, then I don't think it really would have mattered whether or not they beat Duke or not.
If they beat Duke and win a bowl game, they'll have a winning season. They'll be 7-6. Does that mean, whenever I say that, somebody says, oh, your ceiling's awfully low? No. I'm not suggesting that that's as good as they can be. I'm not even suggesting that, to some degree, that, with a break here and a break there, this team certainly could have won 8 games or maybe even 9 games. But that's the whole point then. If you're evaluating where the program is, why in the world would you be so dismayed at this guy if they're that close to being an 8 or 9 win team in the ACC? It doesn't make any sense. That's the whole point. So, I mean, again, people say, well, you're coming up with these crazy scenarios. Well, let's just suggest the Louisville-Kentucky game is one that's an instant classic and Kentucky wins it on a 62-yard field goal at the gun. The season's a failure now? By that definition, you said the whole thing is defined by that game. Well, that doesn't make any sense. Yes, that game is the last game of the regular season. There's no question that with the rivalry and the people's around here, they're how much they enjoy making it a water cooler game so you can go you know, give crap to Bill at the water cooler or something in the office. I get it. You know, all of those things I understand. But the fact of the matter is I can't ever accept a simple statement like that because I don't know. If they go get beat 75-0, yes, I would venture to say that people then would say, wow, that defined this season. That wrapped. I agree. If they win 40-0, you know, absolutely. And they've beaten Duke and they're 7. I absolutely. But, I mean, suppose it's a really good competitive game and they win by a field goal, lose by a field goal. What really ultimately is the difference? I mean, that's the whole point. And you can say, well, you don't understand. Isn't winning and losing important? It is. But I'm talking about if you're going to assess a whole season, you can't assess it on one play or one big play or one bad break or one ball that bounces away or something. Suppose somebody gets hurt in that game. Suppose Malik gets hurt in that game. I mean, you know, this when people say things like that, in order to make it a valid statement, you have to put so many qualifiers on it that the statement doesn't make sense saying it in the first place. It defines their season if they win dramatically and they've also beaten Duke and they're 7-5. If they lose by 35 points and they get annihilated, it defines them as a fail. Okay. Okay, but there's too many conditions on the thing. It doesn't. So what I'm suggesting is if they beat Duke, which they have got to. I mean, I don't care. Because if you say that that game defines their season, then I guess you're assuming they beat Duke, which is also stupid.
Yeah, just the idea that they're so bad.
I refer to Texas. Okay, well, if that's the case, how'd that work out for Texas? I'm just amazed that everybody gets in their own little world for their own team. Like the basketball fans who've lost their mind that Louisville lost to a... Listen, they were not good. I'm sure you can vent your spleen and give me a call or text us better because that gets me more people in that way. Text us, but I get everybody's mad. They didn't play well. I get it. They didn't look good. It looked very much like last year's offense. A lot of standing around. I get all that. But Furman is good. Furman is a good team. They're going to be very good in that conference. They'll play somewhere in the postseason. They'll be in the NCAA or the NIT to be certain. And they played well. Their two guards played lights out. You can lose to a team like that. It happens. Go look around the country. But nobody wants to look around the country because they don't. Because their argument is always, well, you don't understand. We're fill in the blank. We're Louisville. We're Kentucky. Well, you know what? I got you. You got a lot of pride, and it's a great program, and you should be proud of it. But the fact of the matter is, you can lose a game like that, especially circumstances, which is the head coach makes a difference. I mean, there's a certain... There's a very, very... I really feel, for as much as it's fun to be the head coach, which it is, it's way more fun to be head coach than an assistant coach, you know, but the fact of the matter is, in situations like this, it's not that fun because you can't, in your mind, you're always weighing up about, you know, you don't want the other assistants to feel like you're on some sort of a power trip, for starters, but you also have got to be the head coach. You've got to make the decisions, and the players don't, you can't absolutely... You know, wring them by the neck. I am not figuratively speaking, of course. Nobody's suggesting putting a hand on a player, but you can't really, you know, jump them as they say in the business because you got to go back to being an assistant coach when it's all over. And the assistant coach doesn't jump guys; the head coach jumps guys. So it's a very fine line. And I thought, you know, that's one of the things they're going through right now. I think that, you know, the Geese probably would have wanted to jump a few guys last game. I mean, I know I would have. I mean, but it's tough. And he's trying, you know, they got a deep bench. Their mandate is to try and play a lot of people because the way they want to play is to go fast. And so they got a lot of guys going in and out. And when it's early in the year, sometimes it's hard to get a rhythm. So, you know, you can say people say, oh, the substitution pattern. Well, was he going to shorten the bench the second game of the year? What kind of message is that going to send? Especially when the head coach has committed to everybody, including his team in the preseason, that we're going deep, fellas. You're going to play. You're playing the way we want you to play. You're going to play 5 minutes at a time and have to get out. So what is he abandoning that? I mean, it's not fun to try to do what he's doing right now. I promise you. I don't care if he wins all the games. It's a very, very tough task, and I don't envy him. That's why I thought David Padgett did. You know, some guys around here wanted to rip him, and I was like, I hate to be that guy. God, I hate to be that guy. But that was one of the times I had to say, well, you never coach. You can't possibly get it unless you've been in that seat. You can't, because you know it's just like, well, he should be saying this or he should be saying that. Well, very few decisions are made in a vacuum when you're dealing with a team. It's always it always has to be in the spectrum of the whole year. And for guys who are coming back, and that's the vast majority of this team, at least in terms of not going to the NBA. Now, who knows with the opt out? Everybody could opt out tomorrow afternoon. I don't know, but the fact of the matter is, you've got to look at the big picture. And so, I mean, he was smart enough to say, well, I'm not coming in here. Well, I'm going to just, you know, bang the hammer and if kids all walk out and leave, I don't care. Well, that was nice of him. Nobody, think about that. Nobody walked away on him. I mean, they kept the whole team together. And they knew he was in it for the whole year. I wonder if the transfer portal was in effect then, if they would have all done that. I don't know. But that to me, he never got, from some people, the credit he deserved. And if they hadn't, had brain meltdown against UVA, which still to this day rankles me, he would have got what he deserved, which would have been an NCAA tournament bid. He deserved that, and he didn't get it. And that game was the reason why. And then they wound up winning. Didn't they win a game in the NIT, too? I think they won. I mean, so they stayed together. He had them hang in there. So Pegues is here for six games. Then he's got to slide down a chair again. And yeah, they yell occasionally, but it's not the same. And so, it's not easy. You know, and you can argue if you want to get mad at, now all of a sudden Ben DePudi is on the crosshairs. Like, why'd you make such a severe punishment? You should have just six games withheld his pay. I've said this before. It's a lot of money. And Rich Report, it's nice to have money. And six games, that's going to be about 20% of his salary when it's all said and done. I don't know about you, but that's a lot of money. But you could make that work. For a coach, though, to take away his team is what really gets his attention. And that's what they did. And you can disagree, but given the fact that I believe that one of the mandates for whoever took the job after David stepped aside, David Padgett, was you better make sure that they come in with white gloves. There's nothing that they're going to find out about what's going on here. And they didn't. And so they were furious, and that was the message they were sending. So, yeah, it's definitely, if you want to get mad as a fan, boy, it's really jilted our season. Yeah, okay. Like I said, bark up the right tree. That you have a right to be upset that it's jilted the season. But I think the intent on the administration was clear. Again, I wasn't in that room. I'm not advocating it or arguing against it. I'm just suggesting that the message was clear that, hey, we said at the beginning, this thing had better be spotless. This had better pass military inspection, and it didn't. And so they were trying to send a message, and they clearly did. But, it's tough. It is very tough. But I will also say this. This is when I get a little bit cranky, because it's when everybody talks out of both sides of their mouths. Go back, and even under Rick, and I love, Rick. He was very good to me, but his argument always was that the schedule in the Big East, when they were in the Big East, and then when they joined the ACC, the conference schedule was so hard that he didn't have to worry about strength of schedule outside the league. And they played some teams in November here that were atrocious. I mean, just awful. And people were so mad. I'm paying all this money for these games, and look who they're playing. Well, I got news for you. These are much better teams than that caliber of team. Much better. Furman is much better. Navy's much better. Navy's not as good as Furman, but they're pretty good. And they're going to give Louisville a hard game tonight. So, they can. Let me put it that way. I'm not a Nostradamus. I don't know if they're going to, but they're capable of. There were some people that we used to play that they could play that game 100 times, and they wouldn't come within 35 points of Louisville. So, and you got DePaul, who's very much in rebuilding, but you assume that, they're in a powerful league. These are non-conference games that are way better than the ones they used to play. As a fan, that's what you used to whine about. So, you could say, well, they lost it. Okay. Is it going to be like you just want it to be like a scripted thing on a Saturday when they used to do the old serials in the movies, you just want to see your hero kind of be imperiled, but at the end he gets his way out and everybody's happy and comes back the next week? Well, sometimes if you don't play well, then you're going to get beat by these caliber teams, and all you get is look around the country. It's going on all over the place. I mean, that's the beauty of college basketball. Nobody gets eliminated, but these games matter. I mean, if you're on in a bubble late, they'll look at some a big game early. If you win now, like, that'll be a feather in Furman's cap. But if you're, but the fact of the matter is, nobody gets eliminated. It's a work in progress. I'm more concerned with the fact that they I don't care who they played. They could have played Our Lady of Perpetual Help. They're not playing remotely the way that I know the vision is that Chris wants them to play, and is one of the reasons he's got McMaines on the staff. I mean, he uses all the catchphrases, and I was singing his praises last week in terms of, I think he's going to be a coach in demand, in terms of, I think he's young and relates to the players, and he speaks in the modern way that, you know, that the coaches talk, the catchphrases. You know, he talks about the metronome, and he talks about, you know, the dominoes, which is fine. I mean, I'm not knocking it. I'm not ridiculing it. In fact, I like it. He uses dominoes. We used to use the expression, start the merry-go-round. You got to start the merry-go-round, which is you got to get the first guy to chase, and we make them chase us. That was our always thing. Make them chase us. We got to get them chasing. Louisville didn't have them chasing at all last game. There was a lot of stagnant and way too many very cat and mouse ball screens. They went back to that crap again, which I hate. They're not playing the way that the only thing I do see is every time they get a possession, the whole coaching staff is screaming at them, go, so they run the ball up the floor. But that's good, that's step one, but they're not really doing very well in steps 2, 3, 4, and 5. So they're not playing well. They're just not, and they're getting exploited defensively. I have to, you know, I'm sorry, I hate to talk about these guys like they're pros, but Malik's playing terribly. I don't care if he had 9 rebounds or whatever. There was a stretch in the second half where no matter who he switched on, that's who they attacked, and that wasn't by accident. I think he gets scored on like 5 times in a row in the second half. And it wasn't the same guy because they kept running screens and making him switch. And he's supposed to be able to guard perimeter guys. And that was not by accident. They were attacking the hell out of him. And you contrast that with Louisville, who had they had 4 fouls on 3 different guys on their team, including a couple of really important players. They were all important. But, you know, they really could. And they never were able to get the 5th foul on any of them because their execution. A couple of sets where I saw they were trying to do that. It wasn't like they weren't aware of it, but their execution was just abysmal. I mean, it was bad. It was not good. But it's early, still very early, and I'm finding this out, which is interesting, from talking to some of the people up in New York, especially, who are in the same boat, that, you know, Cal, for all those years, had all these kids that would come in, the one and dones, and we always kind of admired how the fact that you take so many guys, like a whole new roster, and then eventually they rather quickly got at least on the right track for what he was trying to do, and as the year went on, they got better and better. That, when you get guys like a lot of these teams are having, and Louisville has, on the one hand, as Cal said when we interviewed him, you know, it's nice that they understand some things, like being on time. You know, you don't have to teach them. I remember a guy said to me, his team was so young, the first thing he had to do is teach all the kids how to shave. You know, so, I mean, they're not that. There's a difference. They have some experience. They know what it's like to go through, you know, scouting reports and everything. But every coach does things differently, and the way they play is differently. And so now, if you get a kid who's coming out of AAU primarily and high school, and basically they're like a blank slate, so you can kind of teach them your style and you don't have to unteach them the stuff they've learned. You got kids who've played often 4 years somewhere else. They're coming in here for their 5th year of graduate year or whatever, and that style, while it's valid, in other words, it makes sense, is very different than the way you're trying to play. So you're trying to get them out of, you got to undo that stuff before, it's kind of like, you know, you're putting up a building on a lot, you got to knock the old building down before you put the new one up, and they're in the phase right now of still knocking the old building down. And not only that, it's not just if you took, like, I don't know, 8 guys, I'm making a silly example, from one program, and you said, okay, well, we got to knock down that building and then build this new one. You're knocking down one type of building. But you get kids in from 6, 7 different programs. They're playing all different ways. And so to get them all in the same spot first before you can go forward, take some work. And even if they're sometimes it's it's hard because they're really ingrained in what they did. Sometimes they just don't understand. Sometimes they're reluctant to let go what they used to do because they had some success that way. And now you want them to do it a different way. They're like, why should I do it that way? This always worked well for me. So I think that's what you're saying. So they need to play well tonight. I know the fans are restless, but I'm glad that the football turned out the way it did because that certainly took a little bit of the flame away. That was an impressive win, and now they got a short week, so if they can go down and get Duke Thursday, I think that game is absolutely enormous. And then they can't go lay an egg against Kentucky. I mean, they can't go out and get walloped. But I refuse to think it's that simple that makes or breaks their season. I mean, that's great if you want to try and build drama. And if you feel that way, I guess that's America. Feel however you want to. But I don't agree in the big picture of things about assessing how the program's going. If they were to beat Duke, play a good game against Kentucky, win or lose, and then go win a bowl game at 7-6 and a pretty strong finish, never lost the locker room, you know, really played through some stuff, were very close in other games, you know, you hope that with some experience and some of those kids back in those close games next year, the margin of error is not so small, and they get one or two of those other wins, and then they go from 7 wins to 9 wins or maybe 10 wins, and those are special seasons. So, that we'll see. We will see. That's why they play them. You never know. That's where we are right now. What do we got Monday? Did anybody bring in food today? You guys have food? Am I thanking somebody for food? What's happening?
No, but I'm about to go get lunch, and we need to take a break. So, yeah, why don't you throw it to break? Because we're a little behind on breaks. And then on the next hour, Sully will join us. We'll do a little conference call.
Oh, nice. All right. So we'll take a break, and then we'll come back on this Monday. Thanks for being with us on ESPN 680-1057.
Are you ready for a job that gets you more? UPS is hiring now. As a warehouse worker, you'll earn up to $21 per hour, and you might even be eligible for a program that helps you with thousands of dollars for college, in many cases, tuition-free. Search and apply now at upsjobsky.com.
Card Nation, this is attorney Alex White with SueDistractedDriver.com. Our law firm is a team of dedicated attorneys ready to fight for you. If you get injured because of someone else's negligence, their insurance company already has a legal team, and now so do you. If you or a friend or loved one are injured, find your attorney at SueDistractedDriver.com.
This is an advertisement.